If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. It's Sam McEwen with Evan Bland, the Silver Tongue of the Pick Six podcast, coming to you a few days after the biggest blowout in a long time for Nebraska football. I was about to say Nebraska football history, but that would not be true, Evan. Nebraska beats Akron 68-0. I thought we did a pretty good job on deadline. We're not on deadline this week. Not really. Not print deadline, anyway. 11 a.m. kickoff against Houston Christian, a team that Nebraska has never played before and may never play again. We will get to that in a minute. I do want us to reflect real quickly. We've been covering Nebraska football for a long time. I've been covering it since, I don't know, 96. You've been covering it since, what was your first year in college?
2006.
Yep. So 06 is for you. So it's been a long, long time. Where does that one rank in terms of dominant performances from Nebraska? Granted, the team they played is not good and probably is going to fire its coach at the end of the season, but where did that one rank for you in terms of games that you've covered?
That I've covered way up there, for sure. I think that's the first shutout that I've covered from Nebraska, I believe. And, I mean, you mentioned the opponent, but you still got to go out and do it. You still have to do it in all three phases. You have to do it from a starter perspective on down the depth chart. They did all that. We got a little insight maybe into why it happened with the Matt Rhule halftime exhortation to his guys about wanting to stay sharp and have that killer instinct. And so that was encouraging, but I mean, it was about pretty much a flawless game outside of a fumble at the goal line and getting stuffed there. You know, it's kind of silly, but they probably should have won, you know, 84-0 if, or maybe 84-3, if they make that field goal, Akron does, midway through the game. But I mean, just in all phases, they were really solid. How many games, Sam, have we seen Nebraska play where they have more talent and they just kind of play down to the level, or they let them hang around, or it's just not crisp for 60 minutes? And so I put it way up there just in terms of intensity and the breadth of the things that they did well, I thought was really notable. I didn't think that there was a way that they could really move the needle much in that game, but they played so well. I think people are feeling even better about their situation, you know, ahead of Big Ten play here in a couple of weeks.
For sure. I mean, I thought it's one of the most dominant performances that I've seen that I've covered for Nebraska. I mean, I think we've all seen some games back in the early and mid 90s that were astonishing. And I don't know that those feats are ever going to be repeated. I do recall the 2012 Idaho State game where I obviously Idaho State was badly, badly overmatched, a horrible football team, really, really bad. Lost a lot of games that year, gave up 70 points four times that season, the other three to FCS foes. That game I don't really think should have been played, but Nebraska played it and they won 73-7, and it was sort of embarrassing to everybody. And, you know, their guy, I don't know if you remember this, they had I believe this was the game, they had sort of a punter who couldn't punt the ball, really. Their coach was very frustrated afterward, and his inability to punt, he was kind of rolling the punts. Ground, I don't know. It was a strange game. That was probably the only other analog I have of just like, man, that was a total blowout. Bo had a team in 09 that beat Louisiana. Back then it was Louisiana Lafayette, 55-0. That was a blowout game too. But generally speaking, I felt like Nebraska checked off all the boxes in that game and did a lot of things they want to do. I think they're still trying to figure out ways to get to the quarterback with four men. That's still a work in progress, even though their pass defense is terrific in the back end. I do think that Akron's quarterback had time to at least throw five or six passes that probably should have been caught by Akron receivers, and they weren't. And then I thought, you know, obviously Cincinnati, Sorsby didn't get taken to the ground. I do know that Nebraska got two sacks in this game late. And then I think, you know, being able to run the ball inside the 10-yard line against an opponent like Akron is something you should be able to do. And Nebraska was not able to do it very consistently or successfully. And I think that annoyed offensive coordinator Dana Holgorsen yesterday. We kind of saw his frustration a little bit, but that's about it. Everything else looked really crisp. I thought Nebraska threw the ball really well. I thought the receivers ran out of arm tackles, made plays all over the field. I thought Dylan Raiola was on time with all of his throws. Maybe had one underthrow to Ja'Cory Barney deep that might have been a tutty if he hits it right. But then later in the game, he throws an incredible pass to Dane Key for a touchdown that might be the best pass that that Dylan Raiola has made in his short Nebraska career. We'll get to Raiola here in a minute. But I do want to talk just a little bit about the fact that Nebraska is playing Houston Christian. Houston Christian is a, I wouldn't describe it as a power. It could become one at the FCS level. I don't see it there yet. I think last year they were 5-7, maybe. They weren't terrible and not a bad team. But they played Eastern Kentucky and lost 20-10 last week, the week before they played Arkansas Baptist. And Houston Christian used to be Houston Baptist and beat Arkansas Baptist 69-0. This looks, as I look at their schedule, I think they're in the Southland Conference because they play Stephen F. Austin and
I think
South
that's right.
Dakota, Nicholls State. Nebraska played Nicholls State once upon a time. Remember that? Bill Callahan played them. What was it back in 06?
Believe that's right.
56-7. That was an embarrassing game, too, where I think Nebraska ran it like 60 times and held the ball for 45 minutes or something silly. So this looks like a team that might go 7-5 or 8-4 in the FCS level, but at the end of the day, not a team that really should deeply stress Nebraska for a whole game. Do you feel like with the way that the college football playoff strength of record thing is going now, and now the SEC basically saying you have to play nine conference games and then one power conference opponent, which is not exactly what the Big Ten is suggesting, do you think it's probably time for Nebraska to draw down its contracts with FCS teams? Matt Rhule does not think so. I think he believes that it's important to continue to maintain these programs. And one of the ways they do that is they play these bye games against teams like Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on your perspective, right? Like if you're sort of holistic, good of the sport college football guy, you would say, as Matt Rhule said, yeah, you play those games because one game for Houston Christian at Nebraska is going to fund a whole bunch of opportunities for their football program, for their athletic department. It makes a big deal. It makes a big difference. It's not great for Nebraska and the strength of schedule perspective, like you said, fans, it's not going to move the needle. This is going to be the week where, people give their tickets away to somebody else. They just don't want to get up and go through the whole thing for an 11 a.m. kick. I think all that kind of plays into it. I don't know. Like I kind of like the FCS piece maybe a little more, just in the sense that all these teams are playing now nine conference games. At a time when everyone's resourced, when it's harder than ever. If it's the SEC model, like you said, they're still playing an additional power conference opponent beyond that. So I think, like in a sport where you don't have preseason games like you do in the NFL, I still think there's value in this. This might be the only time all year, or I guess along with Akron for Nebraska, but one of those rare cases when some of those second and third string guys get in, you have a sense of how depth plays out. Like there's just, I think there's a still a place for those. And maybe you could argue that you should just schedule lower group of four, type of opponents instead. But I just think as challenging as schedules have become, they're harder than they've ever been. I don't mind a game where you can kind of figure things out, get your depth chart a little bit more in order, that sort of thing. It's not the most fun to go to. It's not the most fun week to cover a game just because of the mismatch. But I do still think in the scheme of what the sport is from a macro perspective, there's still a lot of value in playing it.
This is a reminder that Nebraska does not play another power conference, non-conference opponent, a non-conference opponent from a power conference until September 16th, 2028, when they host Arizona. They don't play a road game until 2029 when they play Oklahoma. So they are playing FCS opponents in each of the next 4 years. Well, obviously this year. And then 26, they're playing North Dakota, 27, Northern Iowa, 28, South Dakota State. And then again in 2030, SDSU shows up on the schedule. It's possible by then that SDSU is an FBS team. I don't really know. I think SDSU could definitely make that jump. So I'm kind of torn. One, if you're going to play the Missouri Valley, which is what all the teams that I just listed are in, that's one thing. And those are quality teams, often in large state schools. You know, and some of these teams that you're playing are either small private schools or they're a state school, but they're like the 11th state school in that state, right? Like Minnesota played Northwestern State last week and beat them 66-0. I think Northwestern State is a state school, but what state, what number down the rung is it? It's probably quite a ways down the rung. You know, I don't really know. And so you're not necessarily, but when you play North Dakota State, you're playing the top state school in North Dakota, and the UND is, you know, 1A, 1B, and South Dakota State and South Dakota, same deal. So I get wanting to play those teams. I mean, I think you're going to get a real test or somewhat of a test. I think any of the teams that I just rattled off would have beaten Akron. At the same time, why risk that? And at the same time, I wouldn't play anybody outside of that league or the Big Sky. I think playing the Southland or playing the SWAC or playing the MEAC, and I know I think every year Maryland plays Howard or a team from the MEAC. I don't know if it is this year, Rutgers does, whatever it is. You know, there does come a point where you just say, you know what, there's a handful of teams around here that I think we could play. They're kids from the Midwest. It's a good, whatever you want to call it, goodwill thing to do. Maybe that's the way to go. But I don't know. I could see if Nebraska was like, listen, we'll play out the contracts that we have, but going forward, we're going to try to concentrate our efforts on one power conference team and then, you know, two group of six conference teams. I could understand that. Nebraska is always kind of, they haven't always avoided the Mountain West, but obviously they've only played Wyoming and I think Fresno State out of there in recent years. And I would like to see Nebraska play at Colorado State. You know, not a home and home, but just, you know, to be able to play them or play a Wyoming again, not a home and home, play New Mexico, play Utah State. I think those are all things that Nebraska could do. A little bit harder opponent, but I still think that might be worthwhile. The biggest challenge is that they cost more. So when you play one of these non power teams, they the contract is more expensive than FCS, and I think that's part of it. You know, is that you, why pay $1 million when you can pay half a million to a school like Houston Christian? I think, you know, you could probably name your score on Saturday. There's no line on it, which means it's probably somewhere north of 50. So we'll see exactly what happens. Let's talk about Dylan Raiola a little bit. I thought he played really well on Saturday. Didn't make a lot of mistakes. There was one play where I felt like he scrambled instead of just throwing the look in throw that was there. He could have just thrown it for a little tiny slant for 5 or 6 yards and gotten a first down. He scrambled for the first down on the play anyway. That was probably the one play where I'm like, eh, you know, just throw that football out there. But I'm sure he graded internally very high. When you think about the start that he's had, he's completed 78% of his passes. He's not thrown a pick. I think he's what, six touchdowns and zero interceptions right now. Do you recall a better start than this in recent Husker history or ever?
Better start. I mean, the Taylor Martinez debut season was pretty spectacular in a different sort of way. But I mean, no. How about, like, it didn't register to me in the moment how long it had been since Nebraska had a quarterback who threw four touchdown passes in a game. Riker Fife in 2015 against Purdue. Like an individual quarterback. Like it's that a decade since that's happened. That's amazing to me that that's the case. He's completing, like you said, 80% of his passes, very comfortable in the pocket, comfortable in who he is. I was trying to think of some game comps where you feel recent game comps where you feel like the quarterback maybe did it Maybe 2019 Illinois, I would put in there. Adrian Martinez that night goes 22 of 34 for 328 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, and he ran for 126 yards and they won the game. So that's one that comes to mind. And then some
That's
of the
pretty
other ones are
good.
kind of, yeah, I mean, that'll play. Some of the other ones were sort of, garbage time ones, like the Tanner Lee one, Penn State 2017. Passed for 399 yards and three touchdowns, but they were never really in that game. That was kind of deceiving, I guess. Tommy Armstrong in 2016 against Wyoming passes 20 of 34 for 377 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. So I did a little bit of
Duel
research
Josh
there.
Allen. Who would
Yeah.
have thought that?
How about that? But other than that, like I think you got to go back to some of those early Taylor Martinez games. And again, he didn't do it nearly in the same way that Raiola's doing it as a conventional passing quarterback. So from a passing perspective, like you probably got to go back to Joe Gans, don't you? Just in terms of
Yes.
like accuracy and ability to spread it around and command of the offense, all that stuff. It's a long time. So how that holds up in Big Ten play, of course, remains to be seen. But if you can't do it against teams like Akron, then what are we really talking about? So he's looking good to start, and you can kind of see some early seeds that like this could be statistically one of the better seasons the Nebraska quarterback's had. It's going to be really fascinating to see how that translates in Big Ten play.
Yeah, the defenses get good soon. Michigan State, I don't think has a great defense, but Michigan does. And a lot of the other defenses, Maryland's got a good defense. Maryland's not going to win with their offense. They have one of the worst third down conversion rates in the country. Maryland's not going to win with this offense. Maryland's got a pretty good defense, though. And so they're going to play teams that know how to do more than certainly Akron did. As you were mentioning, Taylor Martinez, I don't know. Like the games that he had against Washington and Kansas State and actually Oklahoma State back in 2010 are maybe three of the best games I've ever seen
Yeah.
Nebraska quarterback play. That was a special moment, month and a half in time where everybody kind of looked around and they're like, well, Nebraska might have the best quarterback, in the country. And of course he tailed off. He got hurt. That didn't help. But I remember talking to Urban Meyer, of all people, in 2011 when he was not coaching that year. He came in, I think, to do a speaking engagement here in Omaha. And the people with whom he was doing the speaking engagement set up an interview with me and Meyer. And again, he took the job at Ohio State in late 2011, for the 2012 season. This was after Jim Tressel had resigned. And we were just talking football. And he was like, Taylor Martinez. Whoa. I like that guy. And you could tell, and I've always kind of wondered if Urban Meyer was not the person who voted Taylor Martinez first team Big Ten quarterback back in 2012. Instead of everybody presumes it was like Mark D'Antonio that tipped it over. But I've always wondered if it was Urban Meyer. Taylor Martinez, I think, is the name that comes to mind. But Adrian had some good games, and I don't think anybody has been as efficient as a passer as Dylan's been in the first two games. Like, he just doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's like the tennis guy that, he's not hitting on forced errors. He makes you beat him, and you're not probably going to beat him with your mind because he's got a pretty sharp mind, and he hasn't been fooled except the one time against Cincinnati, and that was kind of on him because he came back to the play late. If he had just thrown the ball early to Emmett Johnson, it would have been a first down. So it's hard to beat him with your mind because he knows what he's doing. And then I think he's played very smart football. So he's not getting a lot of run nationwide. I saw somebody's Heisman top 10, and it had guys on there that I'm just sorry. They don't have any stats at all. And they're on there because they are affiliated with an SEC team or something. I'm just reminded again that the SEC media machine and the way that it supports and promotes the teams in that league is something the Big Ten can still learn from. Because all we heard in the offseason, Evan, all we heard was DJ Lagway, DJ Lagway, DJ Lagway.
Yeah.
And he's good, but he obviously didn't have the answers against South Florida and didn't look great in that game. at home. And I think sometimes I'm not exactly sure what got out there in the ether about Dylan and what he could or couldn't do. But there's still an under the radar component to his season that isn't going to become abundantly clear to everybody until they play Michigan. And then he'll have a chance to make his statement. And then in Big
Yes.
Ten play, you know. But then there's TJ Lateef, you know, and I mean he was pretty sweet for those three drives he was in there. Three touchdowns. I'm gonna write a little bit about him today. I'm gonna write kind of a compilation column, but that'll be part of what I write. Is about the challenges going ahead with how you figure out what you're gonna do with him. Obviously, Nebraska's got a number of players that are true freshmen and a couple of sophomores who they could choose to redshirt. The question is, will they? And that is our last topic before we get to the games. Kind of seems obvious that Cade Peachock is going to burn his redshirt, right?
I would agree.
He's played really well. I think he's one of their best defensive linemen. They obviously want to find ways to get him onto the field. Dawson Merritt, redshirt or no?
No, I don't think so. I think they like him on special teams, and I think by the end of the year he can be a rotational linebacker for him. So, nope, I don't think you redshirt him at this point.
I think that's right. I'm still curious how he's going to be as an off-the-ball linebacker. I really am. They obviously want him in that spot. Incidentally, that's where Micah Parsons played in college, not in the pros. Now, in the pros, they moved Micah down to the line of scrimmage. Dawson Merritt was on the line of scrimmage in high school, too. And then they moved him to off the ball. They did that at Penn State with Parsons. But then Parsons went back to on the ball in the NFL. And had a great game this week. I'll be curious to see how that all goes, because I think Dawson could play either one, but they're going to have him off the ball. Cortez Mills, he's played in two games. What do you think?
I do not think they redshirt him either. I think
Okay.
he's part of that rotational group at receiver.
Yeah, I think Dane Keyes being a senior is a factor in there. Connor Booth.
Yes, I think you redshirt him. I think they like what he's brought. He was injured for part of the offseason. That stunted the development a little bit. And you still, I mean, he's still going to be behind certainly Emmett Johnson, Mosey, Mekhi Nelson, and Ives.
Yeah,
So
Ives is back.
I don't think you need Booth this year. I think you redshirt him and you feel really good about what he can be in 26 and beyond.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what Ives can do from here on out. You know, I understand that he didn't have the best carry inside the five there, but obviously ran into the touchdown and big hole to do it with. But I think I'll be really curious to see. I think Ives has got an opportunity now because Mosey's out at receiver, and that's where he's probably going to be. Even if he plays some running back, they obviously have a use for Mosey that's more than just playing, you know, whatever. And so I'll be curious to see if now Ives becomes the power back, with Mekhi Nelson as sort of the guy that you take out of the backfield and you throw it to, because that's kind of what they did with him. Pierce Mooberry played in a couple games.
I think they redshirt him, but to me it comes down to what they feel like they need him for on special teams. He's one of those guys I think you have a conversation with in the next couple of weeks and say, look, what do you want out of this season? Like, you can play now and have maybe more of a limited role, or you can redshirt and hey, in a couple of years we can see you. Kind of the Riley Van Poppel conversation from last year. I think that probably remains to be seen a little bit. My inkling would be that you do redshirt him, but I could see it going either way. You?
I think I'm probably where you're at. What I'll say about Mooberry is that, again, I think he's got a lot of potential. A very rangy, very tall linebacker who I think can do some really interesting things going forward. Had played sort of a deep safety sort of role for Millard North when he was in high school, kind of like Sean Fisher did. And then Fisher, as you know, moved down to linebacker. That's kind of what's happening with Mooberry. We'll see how it goes. I would probably redshirt him, but not because I don't think he's good. I think you might get more out of building weight on him this year and unleashing him after. And again, these players all get four games plus the bowl game, so and they get to keep their rich. Jeremiah Jones, That's a redshirt, right?
Yeah, I think you redshirt him. He's way down the depth chart at receiver. Ton of potential, but that's a pretty loaded room in terms of depth. I think you redshirt him, especially with some of the older guys being seniors.
So long as Isaiah Hunter stays healthy.
Yes.
Christian Jones, redshirt, not redshirt, what do you think?
I put him in the Mooberry conversation. I think he can be really good in the near future, the next couple of years, but I just don't see the pressing need for him right now, the way that Nebraska's had pressing needs for linebackers recently in the last 5 or 6 years when they've pushed guys into duty. Like if Christian Jones were on 2021 Nebraska, like he'd be a regular. But I think that the position's in such a spot now where you can pick your moments with him on special teams, maybe get him into a few games. And yes, I would redshirt him. He's a big piece of the future, in my opinion.
Last two are the most interesting. TJ Lateef. I think they're going to be able to get away with a red shirt. How's that?
I think Lateef is a situation where you just see how this season and next season goes. Because if you think about Dylan Raiola, he's there this year. He's barring a transfer, something unexpected, he's going to be there in 26. So Lateef's going to be behind him for 2 years anyway. One of those ideally would be a red shirt, and one of them won't be. So whether that's this year or next year, to me, comes down to, is he needed? Is there an injury this year where Raiola has to miss extended time? And if that's the case, then I think if you're Nebraska, you say, hey, Lateef's our next best guy, and we're going to roll with him, and then you can revisit that redshirt conversation in 26. But I think the ideal plan would be, yes, you redshirt him, you get him into 4 games, get him into the bowl game, if and when it happens, and go from there. But I think you have to be ready to pivot because he is your number two, and he's probably the guy who gives him the best chance to win games.
Did that.
Pivot. What do you think? You're writing about Latif. What do you think?
Well, I think what makes this kind of stuff interesting is, A, he's certainly got a skill set. B, he seems well developed for a kid his age. C, there's the portal. Can you really, do you feel confident you can tell somebody, hey, what's your turn? And we all know it's going to be in 27. And then D, well, if it's in 27 and he's a redshirt sophomore, well, what does that mean for the guys that are also coming in? I mean, they've got them all lined up. And Dayton Raiola is a little different because I think Dayton really wants to come to Nebraska. And I think he wants to have that opportunity to be on the same roster with his brother. But Dayton Raiola really likes Nebraska. Like, I think he wants to be at Nebraska and will be competitive and compete for the job and all that. But I think he's passionate about being here. And then you have Trey Taylor, who's a top, whatever, probably going to be a five star. He's a high four right now, maybe a five here in a year. That doesn't really get sorted out until after their, what would it be, after their junior seasons.
Junior, yeah.
They're doing a better job of not just doling those out Kevin Dillman style when the kid's like one game into his sophomore year. But anyway, Trey Taylor can be a five-star player, and you can see that he has a lot of talent. It's a little different player than TJ Lateef. So I'll be curious to see how they play that out strategically. You could play him a lot this year, and with the understanding that, if he plays quite a bit. And I'm talking about in game garbage time. Like, let's say they're up 24-3 on Northwestern at 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Just want to keep playing Dylan? Want to trot Graham Stan out there? Or you want to give TJ Lateef a roll of the dice? I don't know. There's a couple games on their schedule this year where if things don't go well for the other team, it could get lopsided. There's three: Maryland, Northwestern, and UCLA. And UCLA is going in the wrong direction. Everybody can tell that. So by the time they go out to UCLA, that could be 30,000 fans in red and 8,000 fans in blue, and emptying the roster, emptying the bench of all 74 that travel. You just never know. Could well be that. Because once a team loses its coach, they don't necessarily quit, but they we might quit.
Right.
They might. They might pack it in. Nebraska in 22 did not. Actually, I think Frost going galvanized them. And they actually, outside of the Michigan game, played pretty damn good football the rest of the season. They didn't win all the games, but they played pretty damn good all the way out. Very competitive, tough-minded, we're not going to back down kind of football. But just didn't win a lot of games. But that doesn't always happen when teams are fired. So we'll see with TJ. Last one's Carter Nelson.
Yeah, I think you do redshirt him at this point.
Okay.
And he's the guy I would say I've maybe with the exception of Petrzak, he's the guy I've changed my opinion on the most. When you think about the end of July when Matt Rhule was talking about Carter Nelson at Big Ten Media Days and said, yeah, he better be ready to go. He better be healthy. Like they were, I think they were counting on him to come back and contend to be that guy. But it's he hasn't got a lot of run through two games. Luke Lindenmeyer has had something to do with that. He's been very impressive, furthered, entrenched himself as the number one guy. I think Harburg, as the coaches noted, took a notable step forward against Akron. And the thing about Nelson too, like that I think people forget is he was not an early enrollee. He finished out his senior year at Ainsworth, and then he lost the spring recovering from that. The procedure that he underwent. So he's had, and he was playing eight-man football in high school. So like there's a ton that he has had to get up to speed on, and he hasn't had a lot of time to do it. Physically, I thought he transformed his body from what we saw in training camp. And he still has a sky-high ceiling into the future for what he could be as a tight end in the next year or two. But at this point, I don't know that they need him given what Lindenmeyer has. And I just think another year to develop in all the ways that I just mentioned would be really valuable for him. And that year on the back end, to me, could be an impact one that on the front end, it just doesn't seem like it's something Nebraska needs right now.
Yeah, I think those are all really good analysis. You've written a lot about Carter over the years, so I know that you know that family and know him and kind of watch his career closely. You've written a lot about Fedoni too, and obviously different situation than Fedoni, but I think there's some, you're like the tight end whisperer. You've written about Mac Brockway. You've written about them all. But there's something there. I don't think it's anybody's fault. I don't. I just don't think that Nebraska, prior to Holgorsen, just had a comprehensive, cohesive vision on how to use skill. I think they were trying to just win games, and I get it. I get it. I totally get it. That stuff's really important, but I didn't feel like there was an overarching, vision for him. Like he was there wasn't I don't think there was an overarching vision for Fedoni. I mean, he played well and I'm glad he played and it got him to the NFL, but like I think they could have done so much more with him. I think he was just underused and not entirely appropriately utilized. And they definitely understand how to use Corey Barney and kudos to everybody for that, but it just didn't feel like there was a comprehensive vision for how all these pieces kind of fit together. And I do feel like with Holgorsen, there is. I think there is a clarity about what it is that these guys are here to do and how they all fit. Like how he says, hey, they're going to be in one position and they're going to learn that position and they're going to get good at that. That's called a comprehensive vision for talent. That's like, this is what this guy is going to do, and this is what this guy is going to do, and this is how these pieces are going to fit together. Not they can play every position and everybody can go everywhere. I get it. I understand it. It's a cool system. The 49ers can do it. So I'm with you, but Carter Nelson's a hell of a talent, and I hope they're able to find. I do think they will eventually find that. I think Holgorsen's the right guy to unlock that. Let's go to picks. We were both 7-3 last week, I think, and you were 5-5 the first week and 6-4. I was the week before, and so I don't know. It was an interesting week last week. We did it. We got it done. I'm slightly ahead, which is rare. I'm almost always behind. Let's do this quickly. Wisconsin, Alabama.
Bama.
Bama for me as well. That seems easy. Clemson at Georgia Tech.
I'm not going to overreact to that Clemson first half clunker. I think they come back and show their real selves. I'm going Clemson.
Georgia Tech.
Oh.
Oh yeah, I think they're a good team.
All right.
I think they're a good team. I think they have a good coach. I think they know how to run the football, all the rest. Georgia at Tennessee. This usually is later in the season, but it's early this time.
Okay.
Okay.
Going Hogan. I if Tennessee had made a quarterback change, maybe a different deal. It's still Georgia until it's not. I'm going the Bulldogs.
I'm with you. Georgia has won 8 straight in the series, and they haven't been all that close. Georgia. South Florida at Miami.
Wouldn't that be something if they could do it again? I'm going to go Miami, but that's going to be a fun game to watch.
I'm going Miami as well. I agree. It's going to be fun. South Florida is a very good team. Vandy at South Carolina. Vandy went and whipped Virginia Tech 42-24. South Carolina beat Virginia Tech by less. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm still going South Carolina. I mean, it's your story of when Nebraska played them in the bowl game and just how athletic they look. They look the part. I'm going Gamecocks.
I'm going to go South Carolina as well. We'll see how it turns out. This is a good one. Arkansas to Ole Miss.
I was impressed with Ole Miss last week. I think they're gonna. I think they'll win probably maybe by two possessions.
All right.
Yes.
I'm taking Ole Miss as well. Although I think it could be a good one. Arkansas has been impressive so far. The Backyard Brawl. Pittsburgh at West Virginia.
Give me Pitt.
Pitt.
Just more on gut than anything.
I'll take West Virginia after losing Ohio. Backyard Brawl, one of the better rivalries for many years. I think they played like 110 times. So the schools are very close together. Florida at LSU.
LSU.
Okay.
I think Florida could go the way of UCLA here a little bit. We'll see how they respond. LSU.
Florida.
Oh, okay. All right.
I just think it's going to happen. I don't have Florida ranked. So, this is one of those things. I don't have Florida ranked because of their performance, but I think Florida's good. And I think they're going to play hard this week. And I don't trust LSU, even though I have them ranked like third in the country. We'll see. I have LSU ranked third in the country based on what they've done, not what I think they will do. Minnesota. I was going to say Minneapolis. Minnesota, California. Late night.
These are the games Minnesota tends to do okay, and I'm going to go Gophers on this one.
You're right. Very good. You're a good history major. I'm going to go Minnesota as well. They have a history of winning these games out in California. They beat UCLA last year, beat Fresno a couple years ago. Lucky to beat Fresno a couple years ago. They did it. Last one, Texas A&M at Notre Dame. Trev Alberts heads to the Golden Dome. You ever
Notre
notice
Dame.
like a lot of the people around here are like don't like Trev Alberts now? They're like,
Yeah, don't
he
mention
hired
that
Rule. He paved
yet.
the way for Dannon, and Dannon's a great fit at AD. I don't know.
Yeah.
All he did was leave.
I'm going Notre Dame.
Are you?
Yeah. Yep. I think they're still a very good team. I'm not sold on A&M
Yeah.
necessarily. I think they're a decent SEC team, but I think Notre Dame finds a way.
I'm going A&M.
Okay.
They got an offense, and I don't think Notre Dame's got a great offense. I think they're going to take time. But I'm going to go Texas A&M, and we'll see. All right, that is our games and our picks for this week. For Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six Podcast.